Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
I have a tale from the subway to begin the show.
Oh, I always enjoy those.
So, my friend Vanessa is on the subway this morning. She's wearing her Liverpool hat. She's a big Liverpool fan. Mm-hmm. And a man decides to engage in, would you call it banter? The bants.
And well, I love Monday morning arguments with random strangers.
By the way, New York rules. There's no chatting.
Don't talk to anyone ever.
Not on the subway in the morning.
Yeah.
And not to a lady who's got her headphones in. Unless she's on fire and doesn't know, then you tell her. Otherwise, leave her alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially when you don't know her. But he engages anyway. And his joke is, I'm surprised you're wearing, along the lines of this, I'm surprised you're wearing that hat seeing a City replaced you at the top of the Premier League. This guy is a Chelsea fan, he lets it be known. And she turns around, you lost 6-0.
I would have said, I'm surprised you're willing to show your face in public.
Right?
And by the way, City have a game at hand. I would have like gone into the explanation of all of that. And
do you know how he followed up, though? Oh, as if to compound the error. Oh, I just thought, I didn't know you knew what the hat was. I just thought your boyfriend gave it to you to wear.
Oh, God.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God.
So he compounded it with just like the most condescending mansplaining.
Ugh.
Yeah.
He just picked on the wrong person. I mean, she goes to every...
Well, what did she say? I hope she like let him have
it. Oh, yeah. She put him in... She's well capable of handling herself. She put him in his place.
Uh-huh.
But, oh.
What a way to start the week. Jeez, poor Vanessa. And poor Chelsea. We're going to talk about, really, the Manchester City-Chelsea match is pretty much why we're here today. Because obviously we are going to have another podcast on Wednesday because the round of 16 of the Champions League begins Tuesday and Wednesday. So we'll have a podcast then, but we just felt like, what was it you said? That it was so, the result was so seismic? Was that the word
seismic
you used?
Seismic was a bit strong, but it was.
I understand that sentiment, though.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, we've been talking about, we did that wonderful, by the way, our sorry mashup with Justin Bieber came back on social media yesterday.
Yeah.
And I felt like we dealt with sorry earlier, and this, you can't talk about the way Chelsea are this season and ignore this and wait till Wednesday.
Yeah.
It's just not going to work.
You know, we could almost replay that, the sorry Bieber, maybe a little later on in the podcast, but we're going to do an In the Club coming up in a few minutes with Jonathan Smith of ESPN FC, who is a regular contributor to the Blue Moon podcast for Manchester City. So we're going to get their side of it. But I think the Chelsea side is really the one that you have to start with because, you could almost say that it's kind of been building to this. I mean, really, this has kind of already happened with the Bournemouth match. I'd say a 4-0 loss to Bournemouth is comparable to a 6-0 to City.
But this was prime time.
But right.
This was going on SNL and getting a case of diarrhea.
Right. Like, it's just hard. And not just like the final result, but JJ, it was 4-0, what, 18 minutes?
Oh, I put
I
tweeted out a list of things to do. Now it's 2-0 to City. It was 4-0 before a half hour.
Yeah.
24 minutes.
Right, right. That's right.
Come on. Like,
and
honestly,
really, it could have been 5 if Sergio Aguero doesn't have the miss of the season.
It's a floppy foot. And then he goes on and equals Alan Shearer's hat-trick record.
Yeah.
11 hat-tricks in the Premier League. It was... I honestly... It was weird. I did a thing that I'm trying to get out of my life where I stop going to Twitter to see what people are saying in the midst of like a huge club crisis for somebody. But I had to. So I really watched the second half with... I made breakfast, kept one eye on it, and kind of looked at Twitter too as people went into full meltdown.
Yeah. Do you have those tweets in front of you? Is that what you're building up towards here?
No.
Oh, you're
just
telling
saying.
Me.
Well, no. I should probably premise all everything by saying I'm not some kind of sage that went into this game with a jaded view. I was excited. I thought this was like two houses coming together, two massive entities in the Premier League clashing, despite Chelsea's poor form in recent weeks. So the theme tune in my head going into the game was this. Right.
Yeah.
So this is a big, big match. But after 24 minutes, the tune had changed to this.
Yeah.
Because, and I'll have to talk to to Jonathan about this. How much of this was like excellent Man City, but also just dreadful poor Chelsea defending?
I really think it was both.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it would be unfair to make this entirely about Chelsea just like capitulating in embarrassing fashion. I think Manchester City, you know, we saw them do this to Arsenal a couple weeks ago, where they scored three goals from a combined 12 yards out. Like, you know, they picked their way through. The problem is this, and if you've been watching ESPN FC and their panel over the last 48 hours or so, then you've already heard a boatload of this, but it's kind of the seminal point. Mauricio Sarri's refusal to bend on his style of play is killing them.
This is from AS.com. When asked if he had any doubts about his style of play. This is after the game.
Yeah.
No, because today I didn't see my football. Now, I do agree with that to an extent. At the beginning of the season, it worked. So now we need only to understand the reasons why at the moment it isn't working. We need to understand the reasons. It is not easy. At the beginning, we played better away than at home. Now we play better at home than away. Something is changing. Here's the crucial thing again, though. This is classic Sarri. I am not able to see the reason.
Oh, God in heaven. Well, here's can I throw a theory out there as to why something's happening now? JJ, every single club in the Premier League now knows exactly what Chelsea are trying to do. The book is out on them. For the first couple months of the season, it was maybe new. I mean, I'm not saying a 4-3-3 is revolutionary or what sort, but like,
no, it was
new from what Chelsea of old were. But okay, it's February now. Like, the secret's out. Good managers change all the time. I watch Pochettino. He'll have a back three one week. He'll go to four. Like, things are changing constantly.
You're
and
right.
People sometimes say he's not willing
to
change
You're
enough.
You're so right.
Like, the secret is out, guy.
Just
like, come on.
Hey, guys, this is the team talk. Right, guys, we're just going to sit on Jorginho. We're going to press the hell out of them. And also, they have no screen in front of a back centre-back partnership of David Luiz and Rudiger. Go get him.
Manchester City were just completely able to overwhelm Chelsea's midfield at will. And it was, I mean, it was almost hard to watch. Like, it was, what was the thing we used to play, JJ, from The Simpsons? Stop, stop, he's already dead.
Yeah.
It felt a little bit like that. Like,
oh, that meme went out.
Okay, good.
With the kids wearing Manchester City jerseys. But some of the Chelsea, I've just remembered one of the tweets I enjoyed the most. Ross Barkley should get in his car and drive back to Merseyside and stay in his house and don't come out and play for Chelsea again.
What, you didn't think that back pass was... What are you doing?
Oh my God, just head it behind you into the air. Do anything other than what you did.
Yeah, and like on ESPN FC, they're all piling on Gab Marcotti. And it feels a little bit unfair to me. Last week it was Steve Nichol, who I agreed with. This week it was Craig Burley, who, again, their points are all correct with what they're saying, and I'm not going to replay all of them for you, but like, just know they're killing Sarri, and they're killing Gab for seemingly defending Sarri. But I feel so bad for Gab Marcotti in these arguments, because at no point is Gab saying what Sarri is doing is right. He's just, like, he knows Sarri because of how he covers Italian football. He's just trying to explain to them, this is just who this guy is. He's going to do this come hell or high water.
You've got to give Gab his due. Gab said, and we read this out on this podcast because it was the most salient thing to say, if you want him to change, then you want a new manager.
Right.
That's it. He's not for changing. As Margaret Thatcher said, the lady's not for turning. The Sarri's not for 4-4-2 or whatever else you want him to play. It's not happening. Also, I would just like to say, individually, Sarri ball aside, you can't defend like that. At schoolboy level, at a pickup level, you can't play like that. So it wasn't just a case when Sarri says, I didn't see my style of football. No, you didn't. You definitely didn't. But your formation doesn't help things either. You're exposing that back line.
Oh, yeah. And that's why it must be so frustrating for a Chelsea fan. You have N'Golo Kanté. Like, it's almost like if the summer transfer window opened up and you were talking about how the back line is under all this stress and pressure, you'd think, like, who can we go out there to get to help the situation? Oh, wait, he's already on our team.
Chelsea fans prior to the game tweeting, I wonder can N'Golo Kanté get into the box and create something? What? No.
That's not what he does.
No, don't ask him to do that against Manchester City.
And here's the thing, and we're going to get to Jonathan Smith in just a moment. I want to play this quote from Pep Guardiola, who's kind of defending Mauricio Sarri. Here's what Pep said about Sarri's current predicament.
I said many times that people don't understand how difficult it is to do something. My first year was difficult too. So my first year you could not play in the way we played. In some moments we play good, but not this consistent. The people expect, okay, arrive one manager with buying players and immediately comes. Needs time. And only depends of the of the believers, of the owners, or the people who is in charge really believe in that. The main reason I decide to come to Manchester City is because my bosses, the chairman, especially Chiki, I don't have to convince him. He knows me. And when the situation is going well, not good, okay, we try to find a solution. That he doesn't believe I'm good because we win, I'm bad because I lose. And that is the reason why I am enjoying this period here in Manchester with this club.
A couple differences there between Pep's situation and Sarri's. For one, yes, for Pep, yes, they do know you. You have a pedigree of winning every single place you've ever been.
But Cheeky Begiristan was brought in 2 years prior to you to set it up for you.
Right, right.
He didn't need convincing. The board didn't need convincing. Who does Sarri go to in this moment? They sacked
Abramovich.
Yeah, literally.
Okay. We'll see how that goes.
Bruce Buck. They literally sacked. They are removed. I don't know if sacked is the correct term. But they got rid of their director of football and have not filled that spot. So if he's not winning with Sarri, but on your bike, son. Whereas Pep, they were expected for teething and growing pains.
Right. Now, here's the other problem for Sarri as opposed to Pep. I don't remember Pep coming out with some of the claims that Sarri has come out with. So, okay, it's one thing. Like, we can all get behind the idea that a new manager comes in and it's not going to happen overnight. That, like, he's got to bring in some of his players and that it might take time. So I might be willing to give a pass on that. But it's when you start hearing the manager saying things like, I can't motivate these players. Like, if all else fails, at least do that. Like, we'll give you a pass on the stuff on the field. We understand that. But, like, that's... Like, you have to pick one of those two things to be able to do.
Pep went full arrogant in his first season. He was constantly asked, will you change? Will you stop putting wingbacks in midfield? Will you stop doing all these things? And he says, no, I don't change. He's been successful, and he listed all the things he'd done, and he just said it was going to take time. And then the following season, he went out and spent silly money, striker money, on two guys that could do that. Kyle Walker, Mendy.
Yeah.
Well, Mendy hasn't played that much, but you know what I mean.
But, right, they're spending crazy money on fullbacks.
On fullbacks is the right point. This has not been allowed to... Jorginho's really been the only one that Sarri's brought in, apart from the loan signing of Higuain, which is like, again, is like furnishing the front room when the kitchen's on fire.
Yeah.
So, look, time is important. Whether he gets that, I don't think so, because the structures aren't there like they are at Man City.
And JJ, speaking of Manchester City, we now go in the club.
Go, go, go!
That's right, we go from the Chelsea side of things to the Manchester City side of things in the club, and we do so with Jonathan Smith of ESPN FC, who covers Manchester City and a regular contributor to the Blue Moon podcast. He joins us now. Jonathan, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
We're pretty good. I can imagine you are you're in good form yourself with what you saw from Manchester City there yesterday.
It was pretty impressive, wasn't it? I mean, it's extraordinary to think going into that game, Chelsea looked like a very tricky fixture on paper, but they absolutely destroyed them within inside 20 minutes, and then it was just party time, just sit back and enjoy it, really.
It's funny to watch Manchester City on days like that, and you know, we'll keep talking about the good with Manchester City, but I want to pick your brain on kind of what happened during December. I mean, they held a two-point lead at the start of the month for the top of the table, and then January 1st, we're 7 points back of Liverpool. I mean, we see Man City yesterday and, you know, Burnley a few weeks ago, and it's just like, oh my God, this team is unstoppable. What happened in that month?
It was very strange. It was a combination of factors, really. It all started with that defeat at home to Crystal Palace, and it came out of nowhere. They were so comfortable going into that game. They got an early goal. It just looked like an all day at the office. Then all of a sudden, from nowhere, Palace scored twice. I don't know if you remember the goal from Andros Townsend.
Yeah.
The second goal was an absolute thunderbolt from 30 yards, and that's one of those things, and it really rocked them. It knocked them out of the stride. They came out in the second half, gave away a penalty quickly. It was 3-1, and it was just very odd to see them like that. They're normally so in control of games that they absolutely dictate it. They play it at their speed, and Palace just really rocked them. They sat back. City couldn't break them down. And they deservedly got the 3 points, and it knocked them back going into the Leicester game, which they followed up with. It's the only time I think in Pep's time at City that he's lost back to back games, and it's Leicester are a good side. I think we've seen that recently. They played well at Spurs at the weekend. They're capable of beating anybody, and they deserved it that day. City just went at it, and they're in a real title fight. There's no doubt about it.
Jonathan, I don't want to dwell on this too much because we should be talking about the positives of Manchester City after that performance. But I do want to ask you, there's this kind of train of thought that City are so well choreographed and detailed in their match preparation and what they do and where they should be on the field at any given moment, that the players sometimes go through like a systems jam where when something goes wrong, there isn't maybe the flexibility within them. They don't know how to react because Pep has them so well coached. Do you buy into that at all?
I think there's a certain amount of that. I think I can see that as an argument. They've got their way of breaking down teams. I mean, it does depend on who they're playing. They can do it in lots of different ways. But sometimes, you know, the opposing side just dig in and they find it difficult to break them down. And Pep's not going to be one of those managers who's going to bring on a seven-foot striker and aim for him. He's going to keep going. They keep going wide. They keep getting these low crosses into the box. And if they can be knocked out of their stride, then it can be difficult. And I mean, there are players who have great individual skill. I think we saw it yesterday with Raheem Sterling. He was absolutely terrifying. Aspilicueta, who beat him every time. Same on the other side with Leroy Sané. So they have got that individual skill that can win games. De Bruyne's another one. Obviously, he can score these 20, 25-yard goals and things like that. And David Silva can work these intricate passes. But yeah, they have a formula and they're going to stick to it and they're not going to panic. I think that's the thing. They stick to it, whether they're 3-0 up or 1-0 down. They're going to keep going, plugging away with the system that they know has worked so successfully already over the last 2 or 3 years. So the plan's there and they don't go away from it too much.
So in looking at City right now, 3 straight wins by a total score of 11-1, 2 of those games against Chelsea and Arsenal. Is this just down to like a patch of good form? Is this down to players back from injury, or is this just who Man City really have been all along?
Oh, I think it's a bit of all of those things. Actually, they've got almost everybody back now in the squad, with perhaps Benjamin Mendy, Vincent Kompany, who are still a little bit away from returning to the fold. But it means they can mix it up. We've seen that they've had different starting 11s. I think for all of those games. He's played Laporte at left back. Yesterday he went with Zinchenko against Chelsea, and that was a slightly different system. So I think that comes into it. I think the defeat at Newcastle, there were a few words spoken after that game that, look guys, if we carry on like this, we are not going to defend our title. We need to get right back. We have to be 100%. And they've definitely reacted to that. And it's a key time in the season now. The pressure's on, and this is where the really top players at City have got step up, and no one's done it more than Sergio Aguero, 2 hat-tricks against Arsenal and Chelsea. This is what this striker is. He's capable of winning big games all by himself.
Jonathan, I want to talk to you about Sergio Aguero. So I was thinking Jorge Kinkladze, Keith Curl, Niall Quinn. I'm being a bit facetious with those names. That's not fair. But you know what I'm driving at here. Where in the pantheon of Manchester City greats? I was going to say Mick McCarthy, but I wouldn't do it. Where in the pantheon of Manchester City greats sits Sergio Aguero? Like, where would you rank him in terms of the greatest players ever to pull on the Sky Blue?
Well, I saw Mick McCarthy score a fantastic header in the Manchester derby once.
Okay.
I think Aguero's right at the top. I think you've got to look at the great players being from the recent era, from the past 10 years. So I'm really looking at David Silva, Yaya Toure and Sergio Aguero as being the club's three greatest players. I think there'll be people who would argue going back to the great days of the 60s, people like Colin Bell, Franny Lee. That was a great era for the club. But I think it's really between Silva, Aguero and Yaya. And sometimes Aguero, he's slightly missed out of that list.
Yeah.
I don't know. He just sort of ploughs on and does his thing. And I think with Yaya, you can remember some incredible moments of individual skill, some great goals. Silva's obviously done it with Spain as well, so that gives him a little bit more cachet. But Aguero just does it year in, year out. He just pops in the odd hat-trick here and there. Now he's at level with Alan Shearer. I think we'd say he's the club's greatest striker, for sure.
Yeah, he does have that one goal against QPR, which I think was fairly memorable.
Yeah, I think that even if he never scored another one, that was going to be etch him into the pantheon.
Yeah. Let's see, Jonathan.
Yeah, I don't think he has to worry about buying a drink in Manchester after that ever again.
Yeah, right. Last one from me. I'm kind of curious to hear this from a Manchester City supporter. What constitutes a successful season for them? I mean, they're still alive for four trophies potentially. Like, does there have to be some kind of double in there? Is a Champions League enough on its own? What is a success for City this year?
I think one major trophy is the minimum. And by major trophy, I mean the Premier League or the Champions League. I think that this squad is so good now that just a domestic cup isn't quite enough. I think two trophies is a really good season. And then if they were to go for two big trophies, the Premier League and the Champions League, which I think is the ultimate aim, to get them both in the same season, it's not going to get much better than that. The fixtures set schedule is so tough that to win more than two trophies these days, I think, is very, very tough. But obviously, City's got a huge squad, so yeah, maybe they could do it. But I think they really need to be, to keep the progress of the club going, to keep that winning mentality there, they have to win either the Premier League or the Champions League this year. I think anything else would be a disappointment.
Is there any concern for you, Jonathan, in that team where you think maybe that's a weak link as we go down the stretch?
The left back is a problem. They got away with it last season. Fabian Delph was superb there, and Zinchenko did well filling in. But Mendy's been struck down with injury again, and the standings haven't been quite as good this year. If they can get Mendy back fit and firing in the last couple of months of the season, then they'll be very, very strong. That's one issue. And the other one is Fernandinho. He's absolutely had a superb season. Absolutely stunning season. In my opinion, he should be up there for the award at the moment. I think he's an early runner for it. But if he was to get an injury, I think that could be a big problem. I'm not sure they've got anyone who can fit into that role, particularly in the later stages of the Champions League. He's going to be key. It wouldn't come against the really top sides.
Jonathan Smith, you can read him at ESPNFC, and you can hear him, of course, as a regular contributor to the Blue Moon podcast. Thanks so much for the time, man.
Great to talk to you. Thanks.
Our thanks to Jonathan Smith. Good stuff from him. I'm glad he brings up the Fernandinho thing, because we've talked about that over the course of the season. I still think that they're great. If he were to suddenly disappear, they're a great team.
And the stats say that.
Right. But they're in a title race here with a team that is in Liverpool that's clearly up for it. And it kind of feels like, I would still pick City right now if we're going to sit here and actually say what our title picks would be.
Yeah.
They would still be mine. But it does feel like things will have to go right. Like, if either team suddenly gets bit by the injury bug, that could be enough.
But they may have got their blip out in December at the right time. Whereas last season, they were roaring along, and then they met Liverpool in the league and got hammered.
Yeah.
And that bled into the Champions League then. So maybe they've done it right, the slow burn, get their mistakes, the glitches out, and now they've got, like, they're hitting their stride, it feels like, which is depressing.
Yeah, certainly are. I'll tell you what, we do have more from the Premier League that we wanted to touch on. Also, a quick what to watch for, as the Champions League, like I mentioned, is going to be coming up on Tuesday and Wednesday. All that and more. Don't go anywhere.
Today I prefer to speak Italian because I want to send a message to my players, and I want my message to be very clear. You gotta go and
get angry at all of my honesty. This defeat was due to our mentality. We played against a team which mentally was far more determined than we were. It seems to me that as a group of players, they're not particularly aggressive from a mental point of view. They don't have that kind of ferocity in their mentality. And that's something which I think is down to the type of players they are, their characteristics. And it's something which is difficult to change, because you have to try to influence their mentality, and it's something which could take quite a long time.
Oh, back now. One caught offside.
One of the most popular things we've ever done.
Yeah, Justin Bieber is a lyrical genius.
So we know Bieber likes soccer. Wouldn't it be great if he somehow heard this podcast, or someone close to him did? We could get him in here and we could do the backing track to Sarri, but we could get him to read Maurizio Sarri's statement, because I feel that's really better lyrics than what he came up with.
Who do you think we are exactly that we're going to get Justin Bieber in here to record a song about Maurizio Sarri?
I know people.
What people?
You see, you see a wall and you think, oh, there's a wall. I yeah. think, there's a wall. How can I jump over it?
No, I think, okay, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to go home and I'm going to crawl in bed and I'm just going to call it a day.
And have nightmares about walls.
Mercy, do you think, sorry, we didn't really talk about it before. Is he done? Like, is he going to last the season?
I hope
is
not.
Is he on like a week-by-week basis now?
I want to see, for once in this new era of football, I'd like to see somebody go the distance. Like, give him the full of his contract and see what happens.
The full of his contract? So you're not even saying, like, let's give him the rest of the season, get some players in, and, like, hopefully by Christmas next year something will have changed.
I want to see, can a manager come in to a club with such a rigid philosophy of how he wants to play the game and implement it and see what happens.
I am typically very anti-firing a manager in his first season.
I also don't know who's going to come in and be much better, because that, if you look at that team, there's guys on their way out, there's guys a little bit older now, there's the remnants of title-winning teams. It's a hodgepodge.
I know.
It's not really a team that you could say, oh, I see where they're going. There's a vision here.
But it's also not a team that should be losing 4-0 to Bournemouth. And no. As great as City are, they shouldn't be losing 6-0 to City either.
No.
Like, there are still great players on this team. It's just he's not getting the best out of them for any number of reasons. And by the way, like, we haven't even mentioned this yet. I don't want to absolve the players either.
No. I mean, again, if you look at the way David Luiz defended, if you look at the way Azpilicueta played, if you look at the way Ross Barkley, his complete carelessness. Uh-huh. There's no amount of coaching or tactics or motivational speeches, which he doesn't have any of, that can change these things.
Yeah.
Nothing can change it unless the players are willing to go out and act like professionals.
No, and we're not seeing that right now.
We're not, but the manager saying that he can't.
I cannot.
Do it. And I don't know what's gone wrong. By the way, I should make one point before we get out, which is kind of important.
Uh-huh.
We spoke about the statistic about Chelsea in remember that early run of form where we're like, they could be in a title race with City. They're so good.
It's not just could be, they were for the first few months of the season.
Right. And we dug out a stat that would cause concern, and it was the amount of big chances they were giving away suggested at some point they're going to get caught out. It's come to pass.
Yeah. And we did a similar thing with Arsenal too, where we talked about, you know, that they were on like a, what was it, a very low expected goals ratio. They were converting all of their chances, and we suggested that at some point that was probably going to come to pass as well, and that has too.
Yeah, you know, you can ride your luck for so long.
Yeah. The stats, people want to fight stats, but
no,
there's, what there's meaning there.
What we need is the PFMs, the proper football men, to have their opinions and to not be afraid to look at stats. Because expected goals is just big chances. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know, but people like me were so resistant early on because we saw nerds telling us things. You should look at the expected goals.
Well, it's not fair. And it's a poor representation of who stats people are. JJ, we'll go through the rest of some of the big matches from over the weekend in the Premier League, and pretty much everything else kind of went according to plan at the top of the table. Liverpool easing past Bournemouth 3-0.
Yeah, just a couple of quick points on that. Yeah. I really felt Bournemouth defended well early on and kept Liverpool at bay. They sat deep, five in midfield as well, screening a pretty rigid defence, and they were good. And I think if Liverpool didn't get the header from Sadio Mane when they did, that could have been much more of a dangerous contest. But they got it done, and the most important point from it for me is Trent Alexander-Arnold comes off. Comes off the bench onto the field. That's very important. But also, Roberto Firmino's creativity was sublime, and he needs to hit form now because he was so poor against West Ham. To bounce back in that fashion against Bournemouth was heartening.
Yeah, we talk about Manchester City's rough patch in December. Liverpool have kind of been in one of their own, the 1-1 against Leicester City, 1-1 against West Ham.
Yeah.
But a 3-0 against Bournemouth is a solid result. Now, we know, like we say, Bournemouth, they'll do this.
But it was performances for me. It wasn't about grinding. You could easily grind out a 1-0 and look at it and think, ha, good result for Liverpool, but the performance might have been bad. I needed to see something better than I saw in the previous two games, and I saw that.
Yeah. Tottenham keeping pace right now with the top two. Spurs win 3-1 over Leicester City at Wembley. JJ, I have something here for you with the Harry Maguire, Heung-min Son penalty incident, and I'm afraid.
Bad opinion alert. Bad opinion alert.
I'm worried that I'm about to deliver a horrible opinion.
Well, we do it often on this podcast.
Well, here goes another one, potentially. I don't know. Maybe you'll agree with this. So, Son, like, did you see the incident where Son was
moving?
He's
in the box, but he's moving out of the box.
Okay, so here's my thing, and this is Spursy Andy, just peak Spursy Andy here. So brace yourself. Son was yellow carded because the official believes that he is attempting to deceive him. So I believe now, like, now we've had a chance to look at it, and Son was deceiving nobody. He was tripped by Harry Maguire. I believe Harry Maguire should retroactively be given a yellow card, because if the whole basis of yellow carding guys for diving in the box is because they're trying to trick the official, then what is Harry Maguire doing when he knows I've just tripped this guy, but I'm going to carry on and gesticulate and point at him as though I've done nothing wrong and he's diving? He's trying to trick the official. He knows what he did. He felt the contact on his leg, but he's going to point at him. Get up. Yeah, I mean, come
You've
on,
gone
man.
Deep on this, haven't you?
Yellow, retroactive yellow card for Harry Maguire and anyone that does that. When we've had a chance, like, I understand it in the moment. There's so much diving in this sport, so I get why officials will do that. I even understood, like, I didn't like it yesterday when I saw the replay, but I understand why officials give yellows for guys when they're not sure, because they're trying to eradicate diving from the game. But if it's all about trying to get rid of fooling people, fooling officials.
All foolery, all tomfoolery.
Retroactive, yellow card, Harry Maguire.
Yeah. You could just move on with your life.
No.
You won the game, you know.
I can't. I need everyone to be brought down.
By the way, can't James Maddison just kick the ball into the net from 12 yards?
You know, they talk in basketball sometimes, if a team is down three late in a game and they've got, like, a three-point specialist who sat on their bench for the previous 47 minutes and 50 seconds, and now they're going to bring him in and set up a play for him and expect him to hit a three. And almost always, he doesn't. And you don't even really see it much anymore because that guy's freezing cold. Does the same apply to Jamie Vardy coming in right off the bench to step up to the spot and take a penalty?
A little bit. I think a little bit. He's run onto the field. He's put the ball down.
It was very weird.
Yeah, he sprinted on, right? So I don't know how much of a warm-up he would have got on the sideline. So he sprints on. But the reason he misses the penalty is terrible technique. He looks like he's stretching. So the contact isn't great on the ball, and he almost telegraphs it, and it's saved. I just think he's fresh into the game. Don't ask him to take a penalty. Just Maddison is a technically proficient footballer. He can roll that home. There was no need for it.
Yeah, I thought it was a
little
bit strange.
Look, if he's on the field, there's no, like, and he's on for 10, 15 minutes or 5 minutes even, there's no way. He's the designated penalty. He's the guy who takes the kicks for Leicester. Take the penalty. Absolutely. But Maddison could have rolled that home.
You would think.
It's 12
but,
years.
I mean, you would think Jamie Vardy could too. I don't know. Penalties sometimes.
I don't know, but you are adding another element. Penalties are pressure, as we've seen. You're adding another element when you're asking a guy to come straight in, sprint in, put the ball down, and your first kick of the game is to convert a penalty.
Yeah. One other note on this one, just because it was a stat that I almost couldn't believe when I read it. Now, your eyes tell you, if you've been watching Tottenham recently, that Danny Rose has been sensational for them, not just in defense, but in attack as well. He's been a really key guy pushing forward down the flank. But I saw a stat that Danny Rose has not been beaten on a dribble in 8 matches.
That's incredible.
He really has, like, quietly, you know, become, I mean, he's one of the best players on this team, on a team full of really good players.
You know what I'd love? I'd love to have a list of the players he would have faced in the midfield. See if they're out-and-out wingers, or see if they're guys who like to give and go. That would be interesting, but
this is a guy who had to battle for his time with Ben Davies.
Yeah.
Like, when is he going to play again with the form Danny Rose is?
Danny Rose has had an interesting, say, 15 months. Everything that's happened to him on and off the field.
Yeah.
It's been very interesting.
Yeah. Let's see. Manchester United, they win again. I think we're now approaching the full throes of a Solskjaer watch. I think it's time. I think we now have to do this.
We have to launch it? All right.
Yeah. I think I'm going to work on that for later this week, because they are a Champions League match coming up. So we'll be talking about them, of course, on Wednesday. I think it's time for a Solskjaer watch, mainly because 11 matches in charge now for old Gunner. 10 wins and 1 draw, that 1 draw being that dramatic 2-0 comeback against Burnley where they scored 2 goals late. I know we don't like dealing in rumors on the show. That's why we hate transfer windows because it's one rumor after another. Which
this feels different, though.
Well, this feels a little bit different. This appeared in a an English tabloid, and it basically says that while you may not hear it publicly stated, Solskjaer has been given the job on a permanent basis. I'm going to read directly here. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will be named the full-time manager at Manchester United. It's understood that the decision has been made at board level, although the club may not announce it until the end of the season. United are publicly sticking to the mantra that the search for Jose Mourinho's permanent successor remains ongoing, but the hunt is over, with chairman Joel and Avram Glazer now convinced that they have the right man in Solskjaer.
Avram, key sentence there.
Now convinced that they have the right man?
The two characters involved. Key.
Oh. Avram Glazer traveled from America to be at United's 3-0 victory over Fulham at Craven Cottage on Saturday. He spoke with Solskjaer after the game in the dressing room, having already talked to the interim chief's agent, Jim Solbakken, who had sat with the directors as a guest of United. So if you read this, now I haven't seen this anywhere else. I've only seen it in one place. And if you read this, it's like, I think it's...
This place is not
so conclusive.
Yeah, this place is not entirely.
It is still a rumor.
It is still a rumor. Yeah. Joel and Avram Glazer is the key for me. I could see how they would be won over by what Solskjaer's done quite easily. I can see,
of course,
that. And I can see also why, in terms of they've slipped into the fourth spot. Champions League money huge to them. Also huge is keeping the fans on side, making sure there's bums and seats at Old Trafford, or not even that, just making sure United are one of the preeminent teams in the Premier League. That's a big thing to them.
And morale is really high right now.
Yeah. I can see why they would do that. And also, these are not football people, so they will not be...
Proper football men.
No. Well, it matters when you're making decisions like this, surely, to have a director of football. They don't have one. I would love to know where Ed Woodward is in all of this.
I would only say one thing about this. Look, Solskjaer has certainly done his job since coming into Manchester United. He's restored a confidence. He's made the supporters proud to be supporters again. The team is playing a more enjoyable brand. Pogba, guys who they paid big money for, are now living up to those standards. The only thing I would say is, like, why make any decision now?
Mm.
It's still only February. This guy has not played a Champions League match yet. What if they get smashed by PSG? If they go into, like, they,
it's looking
still,
unlikely now, though, with PSG's raft of injuries.
I know,
which
Neymar,
we'll get to.
Cavani. But, like, there's still time for them to go back into a tailspin. I'm not saying that that's going to happen. I'm not saying that that's likely to happen, but it's only February. Like, why make any decision at all? Why make any promise to Solskjaer's agent or Solskjaer, just let this play out? They're not under any pressure to make a decision now.
There is also something that has to be factored in too. How about this? Team of absolute stars, of excellent players, plays excellently. All right?
Well,
now hang on.
That's a little bit.
But no. You weren't dealing with any run-of-the-mill manager in Mourinho. You were dealing with a guy who has had an increasing record from Real Madrid, Chelsea, and then Manchester United of turning situations incredibly toxic. Paul Ince was on with Robbie Savage on BT Sport, and Robbie Savage occasionally comes, you know, he asks really kind of pertinent questions on occasion, and one of them was, Ince, do you think you could have done as well as Solskjaer? And Paul Ince said, yeah. And my reaction was, oh, Ince, fail manager, thinks you can just walk into your old club, chip on your shoulder, what's your problem? And then I thought about it. Can I honestly say that another ex-Man United manager like Brian Robson, or maybe not Roy Keane, because he'd call every one of them a name.
He would find a way to have made the situation worse.
Worse, yeah. But an ex-Man United player... Paul Scholes, for example, Ryan Giggs, for example, couldn't come in and do... Now, Giggs didn't do well in his short stint after Moyes. But the point being, these are World Cup winning players in some cases, excellent footballers, and now they're playing well. And albeit, let's be honest, a large amount of these games have been against teams that they should be blowing away anyway. I'm just giving the... By the way...
I get what you're saying.
I'm just trying to balance out the... Why wouldn't you give it to Solskjaer with the, maybe we need a longer view, maybe a longer sample size?
Yeah.
Now, will PSG tell a lot about where Solskjaer's at?
Yes, I think so.
I wonder, is that
If United go
is
out
that
there,
a further delay of the Solskjaer test now? That if PSG come out without, you know, Cavani, Meunier, Neymar,
if even with that, and with that match being at Old Trafford, even with that, like if United go out there and beat them 3-0,
yeah,
I think that is still somewhat of a statement.
I still think there's a lot to be said for the argument that, you know, putting a positive, forward-facing, attack-minded United team out should not be hard with the personnel they have.
Ultimately, you're right, and it's why I'm saying that they shouldn't be making any decisions now.
Right, but that doesn't mean that Solskjaer couldn't come in and do very well.
Right, he has at the very least, I think what United's board should concede is that okay, going into this, he was an interim guy. And that's all he was really ever going to be. That's what we were led to believe for probably the first couple matches in charge. After Tottenham, it felt like the narrative on that started to change a little bit. I think the one thing you could concede to him is that, no, he's a legitimate candidate. We will consider him with other candidates. I wouldn't be awarding him anything just yet, though.
You know what's going to get him the job?
Do you want me to say like what they'd have to do this season?
I don't even think tops anything. Do you know what I think will get him the job? I think February 24th is the biggest Man United, most high-stakes Man United Liverpool game in like forever, in a very long time, certainly since the Europa League a couple of seasons back in 2016. I think a win there, I think that's it. I'll say this. The change, if you want to gauge how good United have been since he took over, is the change in perception of Liverpool fans. I am absolutely, that game is going to have me, I'll be in bits for that game.
You don't want to play them right now.
Not really.
No.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Nobody knows anything.
By the way, to round out the top six, just so we've left no one out, Arsenal did beat Huddersfield Town 2-1.
And they did concede a goal. Their inability to keep a clean sheet at times is absolutely baffling. So even to Huddersfield, they conceded.
They won the game though. Wow. It's like.
No, I'm just saying.
I have very little on that, which means we will now transition to what to watch for Champions League style. Boy, it feels like it's been gone for a while.
Well, it has.
It has, yeah. I guess that's
the start of December.
It feels that way. This should be fun, though. The round of 16, the knockout stages of the tournament, always enjoyable. And it begins Tuesday at 3 o'clock with Roma and Porto.
And Roma beat Chievo 3-0 at the weekend.
They did, and I saw how whoscored.com does their man of the matches, or not man of the match, but like their team of the week or whatever. In Serie A, they had four members of Roma in their Serie A team of the week.
Even though Roma, lying in sixth in Serie A, they've disappointed fans.
Yeah, they're only like, what, a week and a half removed from that 7-1 beatdown against Fiorentina.
Yeah. So it's hard to gauge anything going into
right,
this one.
But since then, the draw with AC Milan, a win over Verona. So look, this competition is largely based on form at that second. So I don't know, maybe and it's at home for them, so that could be.
Dzeko on the score sheet as well.
I could see that happening. Certainly. Yeah. Let's see, Tuesday, the match that we were kind of just talking about, Manchester United and PSG, also at 3 o'clock. We touched on it with PSG and the injuries that they have right now. We haven't really talked about the fact that Neymar, you see him at his birthday party, he's crying, his wish is for a new metatarsal.
If we were to look at the overall aim of the Qatari ownership of PSG was to win the Champions League and be a dominant force in Champions League football. We are now going into the second knockout stage, although he did play in the first leg against Real Madrid last season. Was it the first leg he played in? I think so. And missed the second. But Neymar's not available again. Like, the whole point of, like,
I know,
paying $250 million for this guy was what? To be in the Champions League and to play in the Champions League. And now they're not going to have him again because Frank, I'll be honest, he gets kicked around the place in Ligue 1. So it's really not ideal. They did not envisage this playing out the way. And I'm sure Neymar didn't either.
And it's why, like, who do you, like, I don't know. There's no part of me that will allow myself to feel any kind of sympathy for PSG.
None. But still.
But if this was another team, I probably would. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's easy to see how they went and spent all this money on a player to win, so they could win this competition. And now for the second straight year, when it matters the most, he's not going to be there. Like, again, if it was almost any other club, I could see myself feeling bad for them.
But
that
this
it's happening.
I'd be honest, this is pure Schadenfreude. I feel
well,
good.
Well, I just
about
wonder.
I don't want Neymar to be hurt, by the way.
No, no, I'm not saying that.
I just think it's kind of funny that, you know, PSG did this. You know, they flouted whatever rules they could to make this transfer happen. And
you can only imagine how, like, it really must be supremely frustrating for them, though, that this is now happening again. Having said that, like, let's not act like Manchester United are now going to just waltz into Old Trafford and have their way with this, you know, this broken PSG side. They're still formidable.
They've got some capable pieces, but Andrew, I'm telling you, having experience of them in the group stage, particularly against Liverpool at PSG, when they're in full flow with that tandem, Mbappe and Neymar, it's like the Red Arrows. It's like darts coming each side. They pull you out of position. They find gaps. It's so hard to play against. I can see United kind of sitting deep and defending, you know, and attacking on the break and being really good at it against this team. When you look at the personnel United have, I think United
sitting deep, attacking on the break. It's almost as though they should still have a manager in charge who excels in those areas.
Well, he could do the sitting deep part. He couldn't figure out the attacking.
Maybe not. That's true.
But Solskjaer's got the pieces to do it. I think United are going through.
Wow. Mm-hmm. What a bold statement from a bold man. Then Wednesday, 3 o'clock, Tottenham and Borussia Dortmund. Boy, it feels like this has become an annual tradition where they meet in some sort of European competition.
We need to talk about... Actually, you read whatever you're going to talk about.
I really don't have anything to say.
I have things to say.
Okay, well, I would just say this. I'm not trying to be hyperbolic here. I think this is the most pressure that Pochettino has had on him yet at Spurs. Like, this specific Champions League tie. As great as he's been, they have not experienced that sort of success under him in European competition. We know about their other cup competitions. Obviously, we know about the league. Yes, they're in the title race, but they're probably not going to win it.
You want another round.
And I'm not even saying that they have to go on and win this thing. That doesn't, like, I hate to be a defeatist here, but that almost doesn't feel realistic to me. But I think there has to be a really strong showing in this tournament. It can't be like what happened against Juventus, where they capitulate the way that they wound up doing in that. And by no means is that an indictment of how I feel about Pochettino, but, like, this is another one of those chances where he has earned by how good his team has been and by the fact that they were able to advance this far. But he's got to start, not just him, the team, they have to start taking advantage of some of these opportunities. And this, like, because this is so close to their other cup exits in the FA Cup and the League Cup to Chelsea, like, those wounds are still fresh. I know Tottenham have played well since then, and they've dealt without Dele Alli and Harry Kane. But I think if they lose at home to Borussia Dortmund in the first leg of this, I think, you know, once again, people are going to be screaming at Pochettino, oh, he can't win the big one, he can't win the big one. There's a lot of pressure there.
Can I come at it from a different angle? I agree with all those things that you're saying. So Dortmund draw a game at the weekend, 3-3, after being 3-0 up at home to Hoffenheim. And the goal that Dortmund scored, their final goal, Sancho, Götze, Guerrero, it's probably one of the best goals I've seen scored in Europe this season. Uh-huh. And I'm like, capture that moment. Imagine the buzz. Top of the Bundesliga, playing football, probably some of the best football in Europe. This club is in great shape. But if I'm Tottenham and I see the way they collapsed, defending crosses, defending set pieces, Hakimi in particular for the second goal, I think there's a real way to get at this team. I think they are going to cause you a huge amount of problems up front. They are just, they're in a different place right now than we've seen previous Dortmund teams. Like Sancho, he put in a masterclass game, and still they are vulnerable at the back. I think Tottenham can take a lot of heart from that.
Yeah, I would think so too. Now, there's injuries on both sides. Harry Kane, like we mentioned, not fit yet for Spurs. Marco Reus out for Dortmund.
Big.
Which is huge. He's been incredible this season. Dele Alli, I would say, is probably out, but don't quote me on that. He did post a tweet the other day of him. It was a video of him training.
And he was only, like, it was basic straight line running.
And he said,
even you could do
that.
And
he tweeted feeling good with like an emoji of a flexing arm, a bicep, I suppose is what they're called.
I've never seen one.
I don't know if that means he's going to play, but like both teams do enter this. We're talking about the injuries that PSG have. Dortmund and Tottenham both enter this kind of wounded animals as well. We'll see which one is able to.
I'm just saying, free kick. You got guys who can deliver them. Trippier, Eriksen.
Well, Eriksen and Son are in such great form right now. I talked about Danny Rose before. I'm very curious. What is Pochettino like? Is Llorente starting again for them? I think he. I don't know. Is Lucas Moura go back into the starting 11 for this? I kind of like Moura's role more off the bench in the second half of a close game.
I don't know.
That quickness. I think it's going to be Llorente with Son. I don't know. We'll see. And then Wednesday, 3:00, Ajax and Real Madrid.
Who had a great win at the weekend against Atleti. And Ajax, I should flag people or turn their attention to a piece by Rory Smith in the New York Times, which talks about Ajax and how they just become a conveyor belt of talent, but that talent is usually sold, etc., etc. And that's the way they've always been, except that one unbelievable season about 21 years ago. Longer than that, actually. Louis van Gaal was manager. And they had this just otherworldly team that had all come through their ranks, their youth ranks. Unbelievable.
Well, yeah. And with Real Madrid, their side of this thing, it feels like they're starting to figure it out in this like post-Ronaldo world.
That was big for Solari at the weekend.
Yeah. A win in the Madrid derby on the road at Atletico.
100 goals for Gareth Bale.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, they're second now in La Liga. And Barcelona have won just 2 of their last 7. Something looks off with them. Messi was just not really himself. I know he's kind of dealing with an injury right now. I don't know. You got to think that right now Real Madrid are actually feeling pretty good with the way they've worked themselves back into. Like, would you say there's a title race in Spain? They're 6 points back of Barcelona.
I don't feel that yet. I don't feel that yet.
Yeah. Well, look, they still play each other. So if Real Madrid win that, then like you have to assume for the sake of that conversation they win. So now it's down to just basically a win or a loss somewhere along the way. I think I will say yes, there is a title race back on in La Liga.
I certainly think a lot of people in the United States have disengaged with La Liga a little bit since Real Madrid fell away early on in the season.
Yeah, it just felt like it was such a foregone conclusion.
Yeah, maybe we have to check in with Dermot Corrigan or someone like that in the coming weeks and see, ask them, do we have a title race?
I think that'd be a great idea. So that's it. We'll be back Wednesday evening when these matches have concluded to give you a little roundup on the first 4 matches of the Champions League round of 16.
Also a mailbag.
And red cards, man of the match.
The good stuff.
All that, yeah. All that good stuff is going to be happening. I don't have the tweet in front of me, but a big thank you to the guy who validated my thoughts on Project Blue Book.
Yep, that was good for you.
Yeah, you know how I need those. I need that validation. It's important. He told me after he listened to the podcast, he went and watched the first couple episodes and was fully in. I got to find his name.
Please validate Andrew on Instagram, Caught Offside ESPN. Validate him on Twitter, at CO Soccer Pod. Validate him via email, at caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com.
Yeah. Oh, here it was, at xpd_smithx.
Oh.
At A. Gunling, just started Project Blue Book after listening to last night's pod. 2 episodes in and can already say, great show. Bang.
That probably made your weekend.
It was huge. Did everything for me.
Good stuff.
Hey, this was fun, my friend. To you, I would say enjoy the rest of your day. And I would also say this.
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.